Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. The claim is that Joseph Smith received some visions from God. The first one from God himself, the second from an angel of God. The second contained a promise of a golden book, and eventually Joseph Smith claimed that he uncovered this golden book, translated it, and started, well, I guess his claim wouldn't be that he started anything, but that he simply revived what had fallen into apostasy, the genuine Christian faith. He called it the faith of the Latter-day Saints. Well, an awful lot is riding on whether or not those and other claims of the Mormon Church are true. If the history is correct, then Mormonism is the true religion. If it's not, then there are some serious reasons to question the claims of Mormonism. We're going to talk about a history of the Mormon Church during this hour of Issues, Etc. Rich Abanas joins us as our guest here in just a moment. I'd like you to join the conversation as well. We're coming to you live this Sunday evening, November the 9th. Issues, Etc. is a live call-in talk show. If you have a question or a comment on the subject of Mormonism and its history, in the next 2 hours, give us a call, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or as usual, you can post your thoughts, your questions, your comments on the Issues Etc. forum. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find our forum. You can post questions or comments there, issuesetc.org. Rich Abanas is our guest. He's a religion journalist. He's director of the Religious Information Center based in Southern California, and he's author of several books, including One Nation Under God's. Rich, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show again. It's been a while.
It certainly has, but it's good to hear your voice again, and it's good to bring your expertise to bear upon a question that I think is very crucial. Nowadays, it seems to me, and this may not be intentional, but it does seem to me, Rich, that the Mormon Church, especially the Salt Lake variety, is more and more portraying itself as Christian, sometimes even mainstream Christian. Are Mormons Christians?
Well, you know, that's a very, very sensitive and touchy issue, especially to Mormons. And there's actually, I like to give two answers. Now, if you're coming at this question from the secular world, the secular academic world, they would probably answer yes. And that is because Mormons don't, for example, follow Buddha. They don't follow Muhammad. They don't follow Krishna. And so they're not going to fit into any of the other world religions. And so because they claim to follow the person of Jesus of Nazareth and the Bible, most secular scholars would probably say, yes, indeed, they are some sort of offshoot of Christianity. But now, if you're asking that question as to whether or not they believe the traditional faith of Orthodox Christianity, obviously the answer is no, they are not Christian at that point, because many of their most foundational beliefs diverge significantly from what was established so long ago by the creeds of what is and what is not Christian. And so, you know, I guess it depends on who you are when you answer that question.
Would it be safe to say that, to kind of find the halfway house between that sociological answer and a theological answer, an answer that might satisfy both sensibilities would be that Christianity is a heretical form. I'm sorry, that Mormonism is a heretical form of Christianity.
Yes, you know, and it's very interesting that you would say that, because I was at a Mormon conference just a few months ago in Utah, and Daniel C. Peterson, who's a very well-respected professor at Brigham Young University, who I was able to spend some good amount of time with. We had a great time together, actually. He, in one of his talks there at that conference, did say, hey, you know, if our critics don't want to call us a Christian, that really bugs me. You can call me anything else. If you even want to call me a heretical Christian, I have no problem with that. So that might be a good term to use.
All right, let's talk a bit, before we get into the historic nature of Mormonism, let's talk about the historic nature of Christianity. It is, and as one of my friends is fond of saying, an eventful faith. Christianity does put a lot of stake in real history, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's founded on the factual historical life of a person named Jesus of Nazareth and his life, death, and resurrection. And if those things are not historical events. If they did not happen, then really we are basing our faith on something that's untrue. You know, unlike many other world religions that basically exist because of the teachings that you find in that religion, we actually base our faith not just on the teachings, but on the actual life of the individual whom we claim to follow. Without Jesus Christ, there really is no Christianity. However, without, let's say, Buddha, you could still really have Buddhism because of the teachings. So it's a big difference.
All right. Let's talk about the relative historicity of Christianity over against Mormonism in a general sense before we get into the details. How would you compare their historicity?
Well, I think you've got a lot more to go on when it comes to the Christian faith, meaning I think we have a lot more consistency of story. We have a lot more witnesses to testify to some of the very crucial elements and things that happened. For example, the resurrection. We know that Christ appeared to many people after his resurrection, and they talked about these things, and so we have testimony there. We also have the writings of many people who lived very soon after Christ lived, and we can look at their writings. And yet this is very different from what we have in Mormonism. Oddly enough, even though Mormonism only dates back to the early 1800s, many of the most crucial events that are foundational to Mormonism, there are absolutely no witnesses to whatsoever, except the word of one man, that man being Joseph Smith. So what I'm talking about here are things like the first vision, the second vision, the presence of these golden plates he allegedly had. We really have no corroborating evidence to support those things. We have to go on just this man's word. And unfortunately, even in his own personal life, there's some question as to his reputation. So there's some problems there.
And how crucial, how foundational are those two visions, those plates, if they existed, and the veracity of Joseph Smith to the Mormon faith?
Oh, indispensable, foundational. You can't get any more important. I have several statements from the presidents and prophets of the Mormon Church saying everything about Mormonism rests on the story of Joseph Smith. It stands or falls on whether the Father and the Son appeared to Joseph in this first vision that we talk about. And whether they told him to restore the church, that all the churches were wrong, that there was an apostasy. His story is Mormonism. Without it, or with serious problems with it, there is no Mormonism, so to speak.
Is there one definitive history of Mormonism from the Mormon side?
Yeah, I think if you want to read a good Mormon history, that would be called The History of the Church. It's officially published by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It's about 6 volumes long, I believe, maybe 7. And that goes pretty much from beginning to end, and you can take some time to read through there. And some of it's written in diary form, some of it's written in notation, other pages are speeches that were delivered. So that would be the history to read from the Mormon side.
Finally, with about 2 minutes before we go to this break, no more, what does the Mormon position claim regarding the Christian church? Tell us about this claim of the great apostasy.
Well, the bottom line is that very soon after all of the apostles died out in the first century, false doctrines began to creep in to the church, and eventually there was a Hellenization, or sort of an intrusion of Greek thought into the early Christian church, and there was a total and complete 100% apostasy to the point where really all of the most crucial doctrines of the Christian faith were lost until Joseph Smith received this alleged vision in 1820 when he was a young boy, and that was the beginning of the restoration, quote-unquote, of the truths of the gospel. And he did this through a variety of means, one mean being the Book of Mormon, and another mean being some revelations that he received from God. And you know, basically Mormons believe we are Christians, but we are in an apostasy state and have many false doctrines.
Our guest is Rich Abanis. He's religion journalist, director of the Religious Information Center based in Southern California, and author of several books, including One Nation Under Gods. We're talking about a history of the Mormon Church this hour on Issues Etc. Feel free to join our conversation at 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about Joseph Smith, his first vision, one that, oddly enough, was not recorded until later, his second vision, and the origin of the Book of Mormon, that golden book. Now, this is something we're fond of pointing out here on Issues Etc. Christianity, from the very time of the Apostle Paul, lays a challenge before the unbelieving world. It says, if Christ be not raised, then our faith is nonsense. It's in vain, it's empty, it's baseless. If Christ be not raised, Paul is laying there really the historic foundation for the Christian faith. There is an event that if it did not occur, Christianity is not worth anything. Now, Paul goes on to say, but in fact, Christ has been raised, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. The event did occur. But Christianity openly invites itself, in the eyes of the world, to be falsified. Does Mormonism do the same? We'll talk about that when we come back, and Joseph Smith. Stay with us.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you looking for a reliable Christ-centered guide for your daily devotional life? Instead of spending 40 days concentrating on your purpose with Rick Warren, why not spend those days meditating on God's mercy with Johann Gerhardt? Hi, I'm Todd Wilkin. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for November is called Meditations on Divine Mercy by Johann Gerhardt. It's translated by Pastor Matt Harrison. You can order Meditations on Divine Mercy by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You'll find more information on our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy. 1-800-325-3040, issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I was saying before the break that, you know, Christianity has always invited the skeptic to challenge the historic claims of our foundational events, that is the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And we have said if it can be falsified, then Christianity is false, because we have confidence in the historicity of that particular event, not only as recorded in Holy Scripture, but as an actual event in human history that did occur. That's part of the task that we undertake here at Issues Etc., the apologetic task, defending the faith, teaching the truth. Now, if you'd like to help us defend the faith and teach the truth of historic Christianity by becoming a monthly contributor or by making a year-end tax-deductible gift, here's how you can become a monthly contributor to Issues Etc. at the level of a confessor, an apologist, or a reformer. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section right there near the top of the page. Or you can also see page 8 of the latest Issues Etc. journal to become a confessor, an apologist, or a reformer, a monthly contributor to Issues Etc. Now, you can also support this worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by donating online. That website address again, issuesetc.org. Or you can donate by check. Our address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117, or you can make a credit card donation by calling 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. Rich Abanis is our guest. We're talking about a history of the Mormon Church. Rich, before the break, you were saying that really everything in terms of historic claims rests upon Joseph Smith and his testimony about some very key events. You mentioned the first and the second vision. Tell us about these.
Well, the first vision basically occurred, supposedly, when Joseph was 14 years old in 1820. And he claimed that there was a religious revival taking place around where he lived. And so he didn't know which church to join. So he went off to a secluded grove to pray. And while praying, he says that God the Father and Jesus Christ actually physically appeared to him and told him that all of the denominations of Christendom were wrong, that they were corrupt, that the doctrines were wrong, and so he was to join none of these denominations. And that was the beginning of his sort of call to being a prophet, a seer, an individual who would lead people along the paths of correct doctrine. He also then taught that several years later, he received another vision three times in one night from the angel named Moroni, and that this angel told him that he was going to be called by God to do a very special work, and that work was to translate some golden plates that had long ago been buried in a hill near his home. And so he visited this place, found the plates, retrieved them from the ground, and then eventually translated them by the gift and the power of God, which is a whole nother story. And eventually, from these golden plates, supposedly written in Reformed Egyptian, he got the Book of Mormon. And that, in fact, is what Mormons lean to today and rely on as another testimony of Jesus Christ. And it's a very interesting story that, at the time, actually appealed to many of the beliefs of the early 19th century at that time regarding the origins of the American Indians.
Now, a couple things here. First of all, you note that this first vision, the vision wherein at 14 years of age he saw both God the Father and Jesus Christ, that this vision really didn't surface. Joseph Smith really didn't talk about this until after the second vision. Am I right on that timetable?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right. There is no evidence to show that between 1820 and 1827-ish, there was really any talk about this first vision. In fact, when he organized his church in 1830, the first vision that you hear Mormons talking about today did not even exist. That version of the first vision really did not come to be until around 1839. Early in the very beginnings of Mormonism, the real original first vision was simply that Joseph saw an angel that appeared to him. And this angel told him that all of the denominations were corrupt. And we have a lot of evidence for this. For example, a letter written by Joseph's own mother in 1831 to her brother, telling what the first vision was, and it was not this vision of the Father and the Son. We see this apparently as something that evolved over the years, and interestingly, when this version of the first vision started actually coming about in around 1839, that also coincidentally happened to be the time span when Joseph's church, his followers, it was going through real turmoil, and there was a lot of dissension. And it seems that he may have added these elements into his original first vision to sort of give him more authority behind what he was claiming to be, and that was God's prophet.
You also know that, and this may be coincidence, but it may also show some historical influence, that in and around that area of the country, and some of these people actually did have contact with the Smith family, there were others who were claiming to have similar visions with similar claims about a great apostasy and about a revelation, new revelations from God.
Right. You'll find in the first vision that you hear Mormons talking about today, you will find in there all of the elements, most of the elements, in fact, are taken from earlier stories, stories that predated Joseph Smith's story from other individuals around the area wherein he lived, that they talk about seeing Jesus. They talk about it happening in a sacred grove. Joseph even used the exact same wording that was in these other stories. The Great Apostasy, all of these things can be found in many tales that were circulating around his area of the country at that time.
With about 2.5 minutes before we go to our next break, regarding the Book of Mormon itself, after it was supposedly found and translated, what historic claims did the Book of Mormon make?
Well, the main one, and the one that was made by most Mormons, all Mormons really, including Joseph Smith, for many, many, many years, was that all of the American Indians were the descendants of ancient Israelites who came here to the Americas many, many, many years ago. And this is, you know, soon after the Tower of Babel, for example. And so it was the claim that of Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon that American Indians were descended from Israelites. Now, of course, we know through DNA testing that that is simply untrue. And so what we have going on in Mormonism today is sort of a spin being put on this whole story. And maybe we can get into that.
Does the Book of Mormon claim that Jesus Christ, either before or after his resurrection, visited the Americas?
Yes, that is the main climax of the Book of Mormon, where during those 3 days, Jesus was in the grave, he did a number of things, and eventually he visited the Americas, and he spoke with the ancient inhabitants and gave them the gospel as he gave the gospel in Palestine. And interestingly, he used most of the time the exact same wording of the 1611 King James Version of the Bible.
So in other words, at least from a historian's standpoint, it looks as though the Book of Mormon is essentially a fanciful tale about the origin of the Native Americans, tacked on with a visitation from Jesus Christ, wherein there was probably a lot of material from the New Testament that was in circulation at the time Joseph Smith was having these supposed visions, merely appended to the claims of the Book of Mormon.
Right, absolutely. The primary thrust of the Book of Mormon was really, it really was just a rehashing of 19th century theories about the American Indians, and these theories about them being descended from Israelites had appeared in papers for years before the Book of Mormon was published by Joseph Smith. And so it seems that he actually took those theories and blended them with material from the Christian revivals and from his own background, his own personal life, and put it all together in this rather extraordinary book.
When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Richard Bonas about a history of the Mormon Church. We'll be turning our attention to, well, I guess you could call it the building of the kingdom, from New York to Salt Lake. We'll be right back. Have you noticed that Christian devotional material today is sounding less and less Christian? Much of it is filled with generic references to God and empty and crossless pietism, and little to no mention of our sin and God's answer to our sin in the sinless life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Drawn from the writings of 17th century Lutheran theologian Johann Gerhardt, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy, is a genuinely Christian devotional book. Find out more about Meditations on Divine Mercy by visiting our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. Or you can order Meditations on Divine Mercy by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. When you write or call, mention Issues Etc.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm Todd Wilkin. We're joined by Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief and translator for our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy by Johann Gerhardt. Matt, who is Johann Gerhardt?
Johann Gerhardt was a Christian, a teacher, a thinker, a theologian, a Lutheran theologian of the 17th century, the early 17th century. And behind Martin Luther, a lot of people say he is behind Luther and Martin Chemnitz, the third, after which there is no fourth. He was so significant in Protestantism in Europe in the 17th century.
So how can the writings of an early 17th century theologian be relevant today?
I think, you know, in this case, they're extremely relevant precisely because they're not from our time. You know as well as I do, Todd, that there is a rush for relevance everywhere today, and in that rush, the result is most often, quite often, a real triteness, a transitoriness of materials today, the latest fad. And I think the brilliance of the older writings is they pull us to really fundamentally important truths of the Christian faith that have been universally true since Christ himself.
So what's wrong with much of devotional material today?
I think there's a lot of good devotional material today. On the other hand, a lot of devotional material today is geared more toward making me feel good about myself and feel good about others instead of really digging deeper to the fundamental bases of the Christian faith, dealing in a really serious way with sin and my own carnal desires, dealing in a serious way with God's remedy and giving us the gospel full force. And I think that's what this great devotional work does.
You can order Meditations on Divine Mercy by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, and you'll find information on the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy. When you call or write, mention Issues Etc., the book, Meditations on Divine Mercy, 1-800-325-3040, issuesetc.org. Welcome back. We're talking about a history of the Mormon Church with Rich Abanas. He's a religion journalist, director of the Religious Information Center based in Southern California, and author of several books, including One Nation Under Gods. You know, you go to the average Christian bookstore, look at the devotional section in there. You're going to find a lot of material, but if you open it up and actually read it, much of what passes for Christian devotional material today is so generic. In its references to God, in its kind of platitudinous morality, that even a Mormon could appreciate it and not find anything in there to object to. Christians need Christ-centered, cross-centered devotional books, and that's why we're offering, as our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy by Johann Gerhardt. Now, you can browse before you buy the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You'll find information on Meditations on Divine Mercy, issuesetc.org. Or you can order the book by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours. Here's their number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. The cost of the book is $12.99 plus shipping and handling. 1-800-325-3040. Now, when you call or when you write, make sure you mention Issues Etc. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy, 1-800-325-3040. Rich, let's talk about the subsequent history, past Joseph Smith, if we could briefly, from New York to Salt Lake. Give us a rundown.
Well, very quickly, you know, a lot of people think Mormonism started in Utah, and it didn't. As you said, started in New York, Western New York. And, you know, Joseph got a few converts there when he first organized the church around 1830. But after a while, his sort of pool of potential converts dried up because he did not have that good of a reputation around that area of the country, nor did his entire family, because they were into something called money digging. Now, money digging was something that was a great American pastime during the early 1800s, and it basically was treasure hunting via divination. And Joseph and his family and his friends and his early followers used divination through seer stones and divining rods and magical ceremonies. And so this caused their reputation to not be so good. So they had to move. They moved from Western New York to Kirtland, Ohio. They were based there for several years until he also got a revelation from God that told him Zion, the new Zion, was going to be in the Missouri area. the frontier, the outermost parts of what was then the United States. So they all packed up and moved over to Missouri, but they ran across some problems there. There was even a war, a sort of a civil war between the Mormons and the Missourians, because the Missouri frontiermen didn't like the idea that the Mormons were saying God was going to give them all the land there. So there was a problem there, and they went from there to Illinois. They got shoved out to Illinois, and then, of course, in Illinois was where Joseph Smith and his brother Hiram were tragically murdered by vigilantes. And this threw the whole church into chaos. Brigham Young, who was a very high-ranking apostle at the time, took over, and in 1847 he led the entire body of saints, which was, you know, 20, 30,000 at that time, all the way across the plains to the Utah Territory, where they could actually begin sort of raising up their own kingdom, because that was not a state at that time. And that's how the Mormons got out to Utah.
Before the break, you had mentioned in particular with the genetic evidence regarding the possible Jewish origins of Native Americans, that this has been debunked by genetic testing. But you said that's all accounted for in kind of the modern-day spin in Mormon history-making. Tell us a little bit more.
Well, for many years, up until very recently, it was believed that all American Indians were the descendants of ancient Israelites. But as I said, now we know. We have accounted through DNA testing, to 99.6% of American Indians, we see that they are of Asiatic descent, not of Israelite descent. So now, the sort of twist that's being put on the what used to be traditional Mormon teaching by BYU professors now, they're saying that, no, it's not all American Indians, it's just a very, very small portion of American Indians, so small a portion, in fact, that we'll probably never find DNA in evidence, because that DNA was diluted through generations after generations after generations of interbreeding with people who were already in the Americas when the Israelites came here. Now, that also is a switch, because it was originally taught by Joseph Smith and early Mormons that when the Israelites came here, there was nobody here. They were the first people to arrive, and this was a miracle from God. So, you know, things have had to change to sort of flux with new information that we are getting through science and technology. Of course, they're still having problems archaeologically, anthropologically, historically, geographically. These are all problems that remain with the Book of Mormon.
If you could choose, before we go to the phones, if you could choose one major revision that you have been able to track in Mormon history, that is something they used to say that they now are saying, no, that's not actually how it occurred, what would that major revision be?
Gee, there's so many to choose. I guess I have to go with the big one, which is, you know, the first vision. I mean, there, it just, like I said, the first vision as we hear of it today just didn't even exist. There was no such thing. If you would have gone to Joseph Smith or any of the early Mormons and talked about what's being touted as the first version by Mormons today, they wouldn't know what you're talking about.
We're talking with Rich Abanas, a religion journalist, director of the Religious Information Center based in Southern California, and author of several books, including One Nation Under Gods, about a history of the Mormon Church. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. Up first, calling from Barstow, California, listening on XM Radio, Mike is on the line. Mike, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
How are you? How are y'all this evening?
Very good, Mike.
My question for you was, just to give you a little history. My wife, when I met my wife, she was a Mormon. She was brought up in a Mormon house in a Mormon church. I have since, I guess, more or less allowed or taught her what I know from the King James, and taught her what I've been taught, and she's starting to see, you know, the major variances between, you know, traditional Christianity and Mormonism. But my question was, we're going to see her parents in December at Christmas time, and I was kind of hoping that maybe you guys could give me some pointers on how to, not necessarily, I mean, I don't want to offend them by telling them, you know, just coming out straight and being blunt and telling them that Mormons are wrong, but I want to be able to give them some, you know, seeds to plant in their mind that you know, the Mormons are leading them astray.
Mike, that is a very important question, and thank you for bringing that to our attention. Rich, your response.
Yeah, you know, there's it's hard because there's so many ways that you can approach that type of situation. One thing might be actually to maybe talk about some of the common ground, not so quickly. I don't know what a schedule is like for you and your family, but sometimes, you know, we need to find common ground first with people so that we can sort of get into some kind of relationship or commonality with them. And then at that point, we can maybe raise some things in the area of questioning. Like, for example, we know that Joseph Smith is supposedly a prophet of God, and this whole first vision and the historical aspects of what he said, basically it stands or falls on whether it was true or not. And what you might want to do is to get information to show where there's some doubt as to what it was that really happened back then. And if there's that much doubt, how can you base your faith on that? Also, changes in Mormon theology and Mormon teaching, such as, for example, at one point, polygamy was actually something that Mormon males were supposed to engage in order to reach the highest level of the celestial kingdom. Now, of course, they don't do that. And so you have to ask, well, where is doctrine coming from? How is there any consistency of the faith if something can be changed so easily? This is why Mormons have been taught to not put the words of dead prophets against the words of living prophets, because many times they're in conflict.
Mike, thank you for the call, and if you'd be so good to call us back at 1-800-730-2727, I'd like to help you out by sending you a copy of Rich's book, One Nations Under God. You will find a wealth of information in there, although you probably won't want to use it all at one time. 1-800-730-2727. Eric is on the line from Kansas City. He's listening on KCCV. Hi, Eric.
How's it going?
Very well.
My question is, I ran into a couple of missionaries, elders, and these guys had such a passion for spreading the word of Christ. And I think that as Christians, as followers of Christ, we've been sort of lagging behind the Mormon church as far as their willingness to go out to even their next-door neighbor to preach the word of Christ. And my question is, are they actually trying to follow Christ Jesus, or do they have a different goal in mind? Are they... Do you understand? I mean,
Eric, it's a good question. We'll get the answer to that question on the other side of this break. Rich Abanis is our guest. We're talking about a history of the Mormon Church. Here's another good resource for those of you listening out there. You've got Mormon friends. You've got the elders coming to the door. Maybe you'd like to give them a tape of this broadcast, a Mormon friend, a coworker, a relative, or someone who just shows up on your front step. All you have to do is contact the local church that sponsors issues, etc., and they'll send you a free cassette recording of this hour and the next hour. Get a pen and a piece of paper ready, because you should hear an announcement with a phone number and a mailing address for that sponsor right after the Issues Etc. close theme. When we come back, we'll answer the question from Eric in Kansas City regarding the missionary zeal. There's no two ways about it. And I have had a fair number of elders come to my door as well. Young men, well-appointed, polite, and enthusiastic about proselytizing for the Mormon faith. Are they following Christ, or do they have something else going on? Is there a duplicity at work here, or are we talking about people who are sincerely wrong? Rich Abanis is our guest, and when we come back, we'll also take more of your phone calls. If you're getting a busy signal, please keep trying, because we'll be freeing up some phone lines on the other side of this break. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. We also have that live in-studio email address, actually our forum, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You'll find the Issues Etc. forum there. We'll take your questions and your comments there as well as we talk with Rich Abanis about a history of the Mormon Church, issuesetc.org. That call-in number again, 1-800-730-2727.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths into the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly contributor to Issues, etc. To find out how you can become a confessor, an apologist, or a reformer, check out page 8 of the latest Issues, etc. journal, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, grace, faith, scripture, for the sake of Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues, etc., and you. Next week on Issues, Etc., we're going to discuss why do bad things happen. Pastor Matt Harrison of LCMS World Relief and Human Care will be our guest next week. If God is all-powerful, then why is there so much suffering in the world? Are afflictions, tragedies, catastrophes, are they God's work or are they the devil's work? We'll talk about all of that next week on Issues, Etc. with Pastor Matt Harrison. Now, if you'd like to know what we're going to be discussing on Issues, Etc. for the rest of November into the month of December, check out our website, issuesetc.org. While you're there, you'll find several resources on the subject of Mormonism, issuesetc.org. Avail yourself of those articles and read away. Rich, before the break, Eric was on the line. Are they sincere about preaching Christ? Is there another agenda going on, especially when the elders are at the door?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, I think they're very sincere. They really do believe. I mean, their faith is as important and dear to them as our faith is to us. So I don't think sincerity is the problem. They are sincere. The second thing, though, is why they're actually so zealous. I think it's partially because they do really believe what they're saying. But more than that, when it comes to salvation for them, which to them is obtaining godhood in the highest level, the highest degree in the celestial kingdom, part and parcel of demonstrating their worthiness for that and proving and working out their salvation, as they would put it, is to spread the gospel. That's actually part of some of the works they need to do in order to obtain that heavenly reward of godhood. And I was just reading that today before I got on the line with you, a lecture that was delivered by an LDS leader, where he said, you know, part of working our way to that reward of exaltation is to spread the gospel. So that's what's really important to them.
Now, just to be perfectly clear, when you use the term gospel there, I'm assuming you're putting it in kind of Mormon quotations, because
yes,
it is a different gospel.
Yes, I am. I'm definitely talking about what they would consider the fullness of the gospel as they have received through Joseph Smith and their standard works, which would be not just the Bible, but also the Book of Mormon, something called the Doctrine and Covenants, which is a number of revelations from Joseph Smith, and then also something called the Pearl of Great Price. So, you know, when I say gospel, and I'm definitely meaning their take on what that gospel is.
Back to the phones. Kevin is in Appleton, Wisconsin. He listens on WEMI. Kevin, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I would just ask the guest, in referring to Joseph Smith's history, to refer to the actual Joseph Smith history, where he records that within a few days after his first vision, he did share the first vision with a group of Methodist preachers, and that anyone who may like to see additional information about Mormons, they have a great website called Mormon.org.
Right.
Kevin,
right.
Thank you very much. How do we square the claims that you have in your book that Joseph Smith, really the first vision, the vision of the Father and the Son, is unknown until after the second vision, with the claims of Mormons that, well, it's there all along?
Right. Well, if you'll notice, and I'm assuming that this individual, you know, maybe he's still on the line, but I'm assuming he's a Mormon because of the way he referred to the history of the church. which is the standard history. And now he mentioned that in that history, in the words of Joseph Smith himself, Joseph Smith stated that he did, in fact, share that vision that he had with Methodist ministers and with others, and that he was sorely persecuted throughout town. However, as I said, there is no corroboration for that. That was my very point. There is no evidence at all from a historical standpoint that from the period between 1820 to 1823 or 1824, there's nothing outside of Joseph Smith's own personal claims verifying that there was any persecution against him and verifying that there was any statements, descriptions he gave of this vision of the Father and the Son. And as I said before, and if this person is still listening, there is no such thing as the first vision as he recorded it, as recorded in the Mormon Church now, until well into the late 1830s. And this is something, Todd, that's very important to realize when you're talking with Mormons. I would guarantee you that this individual, if he is a Mormon, he truly thinks that the first vision that he believes in now is the first vision that has always been told. And that's something that many Mormons simply don't know. And that's why we have to share some of this information with them so that they can make the proper choices. You can't make a good choice unless you have all the facts.
We've got time for one more phone call before we wrap up this first half of our conversation with Rich Abanas on a history of the Mormon Church. Stan from Jefferson City, Missouri, listening on KMCV. Stan, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you very much. What I was concerned about is if Mormonism is kind of a works righteous religion, and how would a Mormon ever have assurance that they have salvation?
Thank you very much, Stan. Rich?
Well, they don't. Here's one thing. It's hard to talk about Mormon salvation and how they see it. They would not classify it as pure works righteousness. If I had to draw a parallel, I would actually say that the Mormon view of how they reach godhood and ultimate salvation is extremely close to the Roman Catholic view of working out salvation and doing good works in conjunction with the grace that is given to them by God that enables them to do those works that purifies and sanctifies them enough to be to advance into the presence of God, that purifies them and makes them worthy of being in his presence. It's very, very close to Roman Catholicism.
And so to his question of comfort, how would they ever have any assurance? Briefly.
You know, I don't think they have any assurance beyond the fact that they do know, they do believe that Christ has saved them in that he has made the way for them to get to heaven. You have to remember, too, that when it comes to Mormonism, it's almost universalism. They've actually got three different heavens, celestial, which is the highest, terrestrial, which is next, and telestial, which is the lowest. So really, when all is said and done, just about everybody's going to find some place in some kind of heaven.
Folks, we are coming to you live this Sunday evening, November the 9th, and we will be continuing to take your phone calls for our guest, Rich Abanas, in the next hour. We'll also be giving away copies of Rich's book, One Nation Under God's, to the best callers in the next hour. Here's the number, 1-800-730-2727. Now, if you're calling now, trying to get through, you're getting a busy signal, please keep trying. When we come back on the other side of the break and continue our conversation, we'll start taking phone calls right away and free up some of those phone lines for the rest of you at 1-800-730-2727. You can always post your question or your comment on the Issues Etc. forum. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. There's a What's New section there. Click on that, and you'll find the forum. You can also tune in live in the next hour on the Internet. Go to our website there, issuesetc.org. There you will also find a worldwide KFUO logo. Click on that, and you'll be able to hear the next hour. You won't be able to hear it on the radio, only on the Internet, issuesetc.org. The phone number, 1-800-730-2727. During this break, give us a call. Try right after the break, too, because that's when we'll be freeing up those phone lines. 1-800-730-2727. There is zeal. There's no two ways about it. And there is sincerity. There is, I guess we could call it mission work of a kind, their own mission. But the gospel that you will find from the elders who visit your door, the gospels that you will hear from your Mormon friend, if they are consistent with what their churches are teaching them, is not the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is another gospel. And in that sense, when they talk about the Book of Mormon being another testament, and in a sense, without intending to be, they really are telling the truth. It is another testament, a different testament, one that does not square with the Christ of Scripture, one that does not square with the gospel of Jesus Christ, wherein no works are called for our salvation, save those that Jesus himself has done, wherein the revelation that continually renews and restores the church is that one testament of Jesus Christ. And in that testament we find the central and historical ground for the genuine Christian faith, that being Jesus' own perfect life, his sacrificial death on the cross for all sinners, his resurrection from the dead. That is the testament that continually renews and restores the church. Yes, does the church fall away? Of course it does. And it is brought again by the Word of God and that gospel, the forgiveness of sins in the one man, Jesus Christ, the one mediator between one God and man, Jesus Christ. That's what you will not hear in its fullness. That's what you will not hear without addenda and corrections from the elders who come to your door. And that's why we will continually call them back to that truth through that one testament, the pure Word of God, and that one gospel, Jesus Christ, the satisfaction for all sins. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.